the subject of wine can be as easy as opening a can. Yes, a can of sparkling wine, to spending decades studying the intricacies of vintage, nose, and body. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton speaks with an author who wants to provide real-world practical wine knowledge and advice, especially for millennials. That tipple starts now.
Hello, and thanks for listening, and we hope you're ready to talk about something universal, but definitely Californian, wine. Recently, some wildfires raged through Northern California's wine country. Sonoma and Napa counties sustained nearly devastating losses. Some wineries were destroyed. Some survived. But the entire region took a hit.
We're probably looking at a kind of anywhere from 5 to 8 years before some of those vineyards that were really destroyed can reach their commercialization of their product.
Wine country will bounce back, and that's good because the U.S. is the top consumer of wine by volume. I guess that's good and bad. Much of this dynamic market comes from millennials. In 2015, 42% of the wine in the U.S. was consumed by millennials. And a new book is aimed at boosting that potential market through straightforward explanations, notes, and what we used to call cheat sheets. Here's my chat with a Napa winery owner and a lifelong enophile.
Richard Chilton, and I'm the author of Adventures with Old Vines, A Beginner's Guide to Being a Wine Connoisseur.
And I definitely have some questions about the book for sure, but I think given recent events, I'd like to start with the fires in Napa. It's my understanding that you have an interest in Napa. Is that true?
I do, yeah. I'm co-owner of Hourglass Vineyards in St. Helena, and we are a multiple varietal vineyard, which came out of the fire okay. You know, I think the fires reached 5 miles to the north and 3 miles to the south. Fortunately for us, we had picked all of our grapes before, 98% of our grapes before, but we were untouched, which was really great. But I can't say that for all of our brethren in Sonoma and Napa.
In a macro way, though, in a fire of this magnitude going through a region that's so critical to the wine market, what kind of ripples can we expect?
Unfortunately, the heat of the fire was so severe, and it took out a lot of infrastructure. So it took out towns, it took out cell towers, it took out a lot of facilities. In addition, you know, it was so hot, it burned so hot that it really had, I think, an effect on the soil. And so those vineyards that were affected, you know, the soils were affected, and it's going to take years before nutrients get back into the soils that really allow them to grow grapes. And then, of course, you need to plant the vines. And that will typically take 5 years before you're going to get any kind of real volumes. And so, you know, we're probably looking at a kind of anywhere from 5 to 8 years before some of those vineyards that were really destroyed can reach their any commercialization of their product. Now, in addition, those grapes that were still on the vines, there's a real effect because of the smoke. And so my guess is that a lot of those grapes were probably lost.
Let's switch over to your book then. What was the impetus for you to write Adventures with Old Vines? And the reason I ask such a basic question is because you have a long list of bona fides when it comes to the wine industry. I'm wondering what this book brought for you.
I'm really passionate about it. It's been a lifelong pursuit for me, which started when I was 18 years old. And I wrote this book for a lot of the millennials and people who have been intimidated by wine books, the intellectual nature of them, to kind of demystify wine for a lot of people. And I think we're at the cusp of a lot of millennials who would like to get into wine, don't know how to get in. So the first bunch of chapters deal with how to get started, how to buy wine, wine fraud, how to store wine, how to taste, how to read a wine list, which is particularly important, which I'm getting a lot of good feedback on. So there's a lot of that. But the whole premise of the book kind of started when I was talking to a friend of mine who thought himself to be very experienced in wine. And when we got into certain vineyards, had never tasted them before. And I said, well, geez, how could you call yourself serious if you've never had certain wines, which are benchmark wines, in my opinions? I started thinking about putting a list together of benchmark wines that, one, if you're going to really fully appreciate a journey with wine, you have to try. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to taste Lafite Rothschild every day, because it's expensive. You have to know what it tastes like, because to form a frame of reference for further tasting of wines that you can afford. And I understand that some of these wines are expensive, some aren't, but much like people get together in book clubs to share stories, all you really need is a half a glass of any one of these wines to memorialize the scent and to understand the nuances so that you can taste them and then you can record that. So that when you taste wines, a lesser wine, like say Lafite's in the Pauillac region of Bordeaux, there are other really good Pauillacs which you could try, like a Lynch-Bage, which are not as expensive, but yet are really good. But it gives you a framework of reference for you to be able to try different ones and appreciate them.
I was really pleased with what you did pull out with how to read a wine list. And you mentioned it in your answer there that you're getting some feedback on that. Can you give us some takeaways on that? Because I find that's one area that I continue to grow.
What's often the case with wine lists is they're very dense and they form a very intimidating part of the dining experience. And what I talk about is how they're tiered and how there's something there for everybody. But to understand the tenets of winemaking is to really be able to go at it and go out to the heart of it. And that's why I mentioned in the back, I put together a vintage chart courtesy of Robert Parker, which is the great years and then those to avoid. Because if you think about it, Jason, in the really great years, everybody makes great wine. So there's something for everybody. So you may not know, and I constantly do this too, you may not know a producer, but if you know the great years, you can see which wines fit your budget on the premise that in those great years, everybody makes great years. So for instance, if you're looking at a wine list and you see an 05 or an 09 Burgundy, and you know all the Burgundies are so expensive, geez, I don't know what's there. But you say, hey, this wine is $50 a bottle, and I can afford that, but I don't know what a Bourgogne Rouge is, or I don't know what a Savigny Les Bons is, or I don't know what a Pernod Virgilis is, but it's 05. That was a great year. Everybody probably made great wines in those years. You know what? I'm going to buy that, and I'm going to try that, and it's going to be a great wine. And the other thing about sommeliers, they can be very helpful, but how you work with a sommelier oftentimes is important. So what I always do is, because I'm not the arrogant one that says I know a lot about wine, I say, you know what, let me take a minute to study. And everybody should take that time to feel less pressured, to sit down, to be able to look at the wine list and to have some knowledge about where they want to go so that the sommelier can then direct them where they can make their choices. And also the notion of getting acquainted with some of your favorite restaurants and their wine list so that you can open up a bottle of wine before you go, and that way it's ready for you when you get there. Because if you're going to, for instance, if you're going to try a Napa Cab in 2014, it's not going to be ready when you open it at the table. You're going to need to open it beforehand.
Let's switch a little bit to, let's say, delivery methods, right? We're used to the standard 750 mil bottles. My producer, she was recently at a wedding, and they had canned wine.
Oh, canned wine. So there's a big movement right now with respect to cans and as a delivery system for wine. And I don't mention cans specifically, but I mention the great cork controversy. But there is a delivery method with wine with respect to cans. And it's interesting because you're starting to see rosés or some sparkling wines show up in, like a Prosecco, in cans. And, you know, that's going to be perfectly okay. Now, you're not going to see a Napa Valley Cab in a can, but there are some wines that are perfectly okay, much like there are wines where screw taps are perfectly okay to enjoy. And those are going to be your early maturing wines, like your Sauvignon Blancs and some of your rosés, which are going to be okay to use a cap because they're not aged wines to age. Remember that most people in the world drink their wines within the first year. And so that notion of aging cuts out a lot.
Do you suggest that newcomers to wine consumption keep a catalog? I notice always that there are wine journals in some of the stores I
go to. Yes, very important. Very important for your scholarship is to record tasting notes into a journal so that you can go back. Wine evolves over time, and if you buy a case of wine and you drink a bottle, that wine is going to change a year from now or 2 years from now or 3 years from now or 10 years from now. So recording your notes for your future scholarship is really important.
Mr. Chilton, congratulations on Hourglass being able to avoid the fires, and thank you very much for your time, and thank you very much for this book. I think it's very helpful.
Well, thank you, Jason. It's good to talk to you.
That was Richard Chilton. He is the author of Adventures with Old Vines. He's also the co-owner of the Hourglass Vineyard in Napa Valley. Mr. Chilton is a lifelong pursuant of wine scholarship, and his book is accessible and highly useful. For a link to his book and all of our sourcing, check out kgoradio.com/techonomics. Just look for the article that goes with this week's show. Coming up after the break, one of our favorite stories of 2017, two bootstrapping entrepreneurs who left UC Santa Cruz to go fishing.
It's kind of crazy. Like, the fish that you get at your grocery store or fish market is often a week old, 2 weeks old. And so I think that really pushed us to kind of start looking into the system and see what we could change about that, how there could be more traceability, there could be better quality in a product.
More with tryfreshcatch.com is coming up next. This is Techonomics. I'm Jason Middleton. Please come on back.